Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Don't Quote Me. I'm your host, Orla Condon, and this week I'm joined by broadcaster and writer Louise McSharry. After over 10 years at the National Broadcaster, earlier this year, Louise launched her podcast, Catch Up with Louise McSharry, as well as continuing her work as a columnist with Independent.ie. Coming up on today's show, I'm a Celebrity 2022 draws to a close. Balenciaga faces major backlash after outrageous latest campaign. The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills are taking a break while Adele is kicking into gear at her Las Vegas residency. In other news, we're talking Christmas trees, candles, and all things festive because 'tis the season. Let's get stuck in. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Don't Quote Me. I am joined this week by someone that I talk to more on the other side of the mic than I do on this side of the mic. It is Louise McSharry of the Catch Up podcast. Welcome to your first episode of Don't Quote Me, but we've done My Pot and Paper together before. So yeah, this isn't our first rodeo.
No, we've done a lot together now at this stage.
We have, to be fair.
In 2FM and all the rest.
We've tackled a multitude of mediums and platforms. How are you doing? I know... little spoiler, Louise is doing a little podcast Christmas party for all her contributors and I can't make it. And I can't believe it.
By one day. That's
one day.
The really cruel part of it is that, like, you know, one day. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm looking forward to that. I kind of put the Christmas trees up yesterday. I have two. Pink, one traditional.
I was going to say, do you theme them or... Okay, so one is pink. One is kind of the alt tree then, right?
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, my friend was like on his Instagram stories, posted a picture of this stunning pink Christmas tree in a shop. Mm. And I was like, I really want that. And I was like, I'm going to buy it. And I waited until after Christmas and I got it on sale.
Smart.
So this is the second year of the pink Christmas tree and I love it. And I put, yeah, like it's got like donuts, ice creams, rainbows.
Cute.
Yeah, it is cute. I love it. It brings me happiness. But we're away next weekend at Other Voices. So I was like, we better get that Christmas tree up. God damn it. And I'm so glad.
It's the one thing that makes me so sad about moving to this country is Other Voices every winter. I could fly back and go to it, but it's just like...
literally the highlight of my year. So I'm living for it.
The best weekend. Just the best weekend.
100%.
Love the pink Christmas tree. Question, do people give you shit about it in the DMs? Because I feel like something like that. Don't they?
No. People don't really give me shit in the DMs anymore. I had my story replies off for two and a half years. Because I, not because I was necessarily getting a lot of shit, but I was getting some shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, why am I inviting this into my life? I don't need this.
Yeah.
And people could still message me. Like, they could message me through my Instagram page, but it made it harder.
So yeah. I was like, the rage had died down by the time they got to you then.
Yeah, it was like, only someone who really wants to send me a message is gonna do it that way, as opposed to someone who might just flippantly fire off a mean comment, you know?
Yeah.
And I still got the odd one, but I only recently turned my story replies back on, and so far it's been good. But like, to be honest, the minute it starts again with like nastiness, I would just turn them off again, because like, oh, man, like I the reason I turned them off in the first place is because I remember there would be nights where I'd be sitting on the couch, like with Gordon, my husband would be there, and we'd be watching TV, and I'd look at my phone, and then all of a sudden my mood would have dramatically changed, because someone would have said something like, you know, horrible in the comments, and then all of a sudden I'm in a failure, and he's not privy to any of what's gone on, and he's like, what the hell, why are you being so horrible all of a sudden, because obviously I take everything out on him. So anyway, that was a long answer. In short, no one has given me shit. Most people are just kind of jealous and into it, which I like. Like, we do have the normal Christmas tree in the sitting room. Still.
The tokenism tree, that red and gold vibe, is it?
Yeah, but if I had to get rid of one, I think I'd keep the pink one now.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. Like, I'm the same. We had to clear out some ornaments this year because we didn't have enough space on our tree, and we got rid of all the basic... And I don't mean basic in a dismissive way, but just all of the like standard, like goldy ones. Because we were like, oh, we got this cool turtle that we want to put in the tree. And like, you're feck it. There's no rules to that kind of stuff. Do you know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Do what makes you feel good.
Exactly. Exactly. And I totally get you what you're saying about the DMs as well. Now, I imagine I wouldn't get it to the extent that you do, given the volumes of people that follow you in comparison to me. But it is that if you're a person, and I don't know if you're like this, but I am very susceptible to people's response to me at all times. Mm-hmm. So if people aren't responding positively to me, I take it really hard. And I make it almost my mission to figure out why and if I can change it, which in certain circumstances is probably good. In the social media sphere, it is absolutely not, because there are some people you will just never win over. And then to sit and mull on that is like an awful, it's like an awful feeling. It's
but
not
then you
nice
end up in like this weird shame spiral of like, why do I even care? What's wrong with me? Like, and then all the negativity gets turned back on yourself. So yeah, that's why I think, like, I personally think that everyone should kind of heavily filter their social media in terms of who they interact with and what they see. Because there's enough in life to make you feel bad about yourself without inviting more of that in my opinion.
Preach.
So I'm try to keep myself in a safe space as much as possible.
That's the energy we're going to channel this week. It is Monday morning as we record this, so as we head into this week, let's channel that energy. We're going to start out of order, because I feel like someone who understands public scrutiny better than us is Matt Hancock, which brings us to I'm a Celebrity, which brings us to the season finale last night. Louise, were you watching it? Did you care? Where are you in that?
I was watching it initially, and then I just got busy and like I kind of fell off a little bit, but I was kind of dipped in and out. I think it was an okay series of I'm a Celebrity as a TV program. Like, I don't think it was like really great. I've seen much better. And I think that it was a mistake to put Matt Hancock in there. I think it kind of sidetracked the entire thing, and it made everyone feel really weird, and nobody felt like they could really... like watching, you didn't feel like you could have as much fun with it. And the fact that he was in the final is just wild.
Sickening. So, last night the final aired, we had the final three, which was Matt, Jill Scott, and Owen Warner from Hollyoaks.
Can I just say, I bet I'm the only old bitch who every time I saw Jill Scott, I was thinking of the R&B singer. Like, literally every time I had to keep reminding myself. Everyone is listening going, who?
Everyone's like, quick Google.
But that's
Jill.
What my brain was doing.
An absolutely deserved winner, I think. Like, really, really funny, really up for the challenges, like the right combination of a winner, like good personality, really up for the journey of the show and getting stuck in, and also just had some moments throughout the series. But like you said, like, really shocking that Matt Hancock made it all the way to the final. Mike Tindall was knocked out right before, he was knocked out on Saturday night, which was a pretty big shock. Everyone kind of thought it was locked in with Jill, Owen and Mike. But Matt managed to get there. I mean, for me, like, yeah, grand, whatever, Jill won. Great, great to talk with the show. But the more interesting conversation, I think, for me is kind of twofold. A, the punt that ITV took by putting someone like Matt Hancock in, knowing that it was going to cause quite an aggressive reaction from fans, and kind of flirting with that aggressive reaction a little bit in the earlier weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then almost you saw them realize that actually this guy's getting through and he's no longer doing challenges, and actually he's doing well in the vote. And we saw in the last couple of days them trying to introduce these villain elements, you know, showing him putting his number on the t-shirt really blatantly on his bed so people could see his number to vote for him, and all these kind of clips they were focusing in on. Mm-hmm. Do you think ITV, I don't know, has overplayed their hand, the right phrase, but how do you think they managed this, and do you think it was a right decision for them?
No, I mean, I think it was a wrong decision. I think it was a wrong decision for loads of different reasons. The first reason is that I just don't think that politicians belong in programs like this. Like, it's called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. He is not a celebrity. He's an elected official. He should have been at work. And, you know, even if you remove all of the kind of COVID factors and the upset that people felt about him before he went in, I think it was wrong, number one. Number two, I think the fact that he was in there put everyone else on edge because it put them all in such an awkward position.
Yeah.
Excuse me, because I said this on my podcast. Like, you know, if you are in, let's say you, me, and whatever 10 friends are all in a gaff together for 3 weeks for whatever reason, and there's someone there who you've heard nothing but bad things about, but you've never met them before, but you go in thinking she's an arsehole. Like, if that arsehole is there sitting being entirely pleasant and nice for those 3 weeks, you, no way you're going to be anything but nice to them. Like, you can't as a human being, like, unless you're, you know, kind of a very different person to me and to most people, I think you have no choice but to kind of take them as they are. And at some stage you have to kind of get on with it. And so all of the other people were put in that position. People like Chris Moyles, who I know had strong feelings, Boy George, whatever, like, you know, they kind of had no choice but to be pleasant with him. And so then he just got to kind of, get off scot-free to a certain extent. And, you know, he went in there because he wanted to kind of, you know, if people see the real me, they'll love me.
Oh, and, such bullshit, isn't it?
Yeah. And like, I don't think that that happened, but I think there was, I mean, if we believe, and I think we have to, that like the voting and stuff is accurate, then obviously there was a turning of the tides in, you know, for many people. And like, I don't know that he deserves that, you know?
And I thought, interestingly, like, I have been kind of watching the red tabs and kind of the coverage of it to see what way it was skewing, especially here in the UK, to see how that reception was going to change over the 3 weeks. And it was just really interesting to see the kind of headlines of, you know, fans hit out at bully Chris Moyles for talking behind Matt Hancock's back, or,
like,
you know, Charlene White taps out a conversation. And it's like, how are, after a week and a half of this guy being in the jungle, our audiences, is it the audience's removes this kind of stuff so much from reality that they just don't, they're not piecing those pieces together? Because, and like, we didn't go through COVID under his rules. Like, we went, I did COVID in Ireland, as did you. So like, I would have thought that our reaction to him potentially would have been softer because we didn't live under the rules that he enforced and the ones he broke. So it's just really interesting to see how people then were like defending him.
Well, I think it's kind of a combination of the same thing that I was saying about the people who were in there with him. That kind of, oh, sure, look, I mean, he's not doing anything bad. He doesn't seem like a bad guy. I think people can kind of talk themselves around in that way. And I think also his strategy in there was quite clever because it was like, own up and own it. And, you know, if someone is doing that, again, it's kind of hard to maintain your, like, you know, level of frustration or rage or whatever it is. Like, at the end of the day, will people think of Matt Hancock now as like, oh, that nice guy from I'm a Celebrity, or will they think of him as the health minister who got everything wrong? I think they probably, for the most part, will still think of him as the health minister who got everything wrong. I mean, I can't understand how he can possibly just go back to sitting in the House of Commons now.
But this is it now. Like, he goes back to work. He's an elected official, like you say. He left his constituents for 3 weeks to take a reported £400,000, you know, payout to go on I'm a Celebrity. Does he walk back in and go, hi guys, I'm back? I mean, he obviously was let go from his kind of given positions and got within government. What does that path, I mean, we spoke about this previously on the podcast, like, what is his PR and his management team thinking? It has paid off in some respects, given he was obviously popular.
But it definitely has.
Is it the kind of, is it the space that he can cash in on in the way that he wants? It doesn't feel like politics is where he sees his long-term future, I think.
No, because I don't think he would have gone on the program if it was. Although, you know, maybe as a politician, it's the best thing you can possibly do. Like, yeah. I don't know, because I'm just thinking, like, will people vote for him again if he ran? And honestly, before I'm a Celeb, I think more people will vote for him now than they would have before. So yeah. I guess he wins.
Well, I mean, 12 million votes were cast in the final. Obviously, the majority of them went to jail. But that's no small feat either. Mm-mm. Like, you're thinking he probably picked up a mil at least of public votes, which I believe the UK viewers have to pay for. I think if you're calling in, you have to pay for it. So like, people are actually paying to register votes for this guy. I know he has the book coming out later this year. That's presumably going to do potentially well. I mean,
Is it though? I don't know. Like, are the people who vote for I'm a Celeb the people who buy Matt Hancock's book? I don't think so.
And does it matter?
Like, I don't know.
Because now he's upped his value again to, say, TV show bookers media bookers who are going to be like, he's doing his press tour for his book. He did I'm a Celeb. That's taking kind of multiple audiences. Let's get him on.
Yeah.
So I feel like he's going to have a pretty flat out few months.
One thing I think is funny is that, like, when he won, he talked again about the fact that he wanted to show that, like, you know, politicians are people too. And he said, we've all got different sides to our personalities. I just wanted to show what I'm like as a person. Lots of people come in with preconceived ideas for lots of reasons, and I just wanted to be myself. Like, sorry, you were hardly Mr. Personality. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like everyone thinks we're just stiffs in suits. You were pretty stiff, man. Like, there wasn't, you know, you weren't exactly banging the crock out of everything.
Oh, no, he was completely, like, computerized.
You were
who
we thought you'd be. Like,
yeah. It, like, you could see the seconds it took for his, like, brain to send the signal to his face to, like, have an emotion. It was like, this is so weird. I just, as we started seeing him placing his shirts around the place with his numbers, I was like, this is a pot. Like, he has not changed. He is very much eyes on the prize. And how you could watch it and think, oh, he's kind of relaxed into it.
Just
and
a merry man. No, I never felt that, I have to say. Yeah, not for one moment.
Congratulations to Jill Scott, though. Only the second ever LGBTQ+ winer in the 22 years or 21 years of I'm a Celeb. The first ever woman to win it, which is, like, crazy.
First also queer woman, right?
First queer woman. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. LGBTQ woman. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, like, so mad that we're I hate to be that person, like, we're still there, but, like, it's mad that it was when I saw that last night, I was like, Jesus, I wouldn't have thought that we would have gotten 2 decades without a gay woman.
It is mad.
Yeah.
It is mad. But then I suppose so much progress has been made just in very recent years, I think. And I think as well, like, Jill probably, I think actually, and you can obviously disagree with me here, but I think that the women's football team, I just cannot bring myself to call them the Lionesses.
It's something instinctively Irish in us, isn't it?
I can't do it. But that they, because obviously there's loads of gay women on that team, like, I think, and they were such heroes and they were lauded so much. Like, I think that actually genuinely did something in terms of general kind of public attitude. Like, I think there is still limited representation of gay women in the media, as in my opinion, compared to gay men. Like, we see a lot more gay men. And yes, it tends to be kind of one type of gay man, but that is diversifying as well. Whereas gay women are less represented, I think. And I think, you know, that team winning the World Cup, the Euros? The World Cup?
Euros.
I'm so sweaty.
I'm kind of taking a punt that nobody listening to this podcast will know either. So it's fine.
Because the Irish women are going to the World Cup. So anyway, you know, I think them winning that big trophy really did something in a lot of people's
minds. Big trophy.
Yeah. It's a big trophy, right? I don't know. I'm sure there's got to be a trophy. I love sports.
Oh, no. We love sports on this podcast. No, I totally do agree. I think... And it's sad that it's a space like that where you need to do, like, this remarkable thing just to get kind of a smidgen of, you know, approval from the general public. But I do agree with you. I do think it kind of shifted the dial a little bit on that. And it is true. Like, you look at the media landscape in Ireland. Like,
yeah. Well, we had Anna Nolan.
We had few and far between is what we had. Anna Nolan. I could probably count three in my lifetime.
Who are your three? Come on, give them to me.
Anna Nolan.
I'm struggling. Anna Nolan, yeah.
Jenny Green,
yes. How could I forget my former colleague?
And
is that it?
I think that might be it. That's all. That's so bad. If there is more, I'm so sorry. I don't mean
wow,
to.
Wow, that's so bad.
Isn't it bad? But it's like, it's really bad that's my immediate recall. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, even if there are more, like, that's the recall. And that's
I think there probably are more, you know, that we might not even know about, you know?
Yeah.
Is the reality. Oh. Like, I think the recent years have been very developmental for lots of people.
Look, we all learn about ourselves.
More gay women in media. I agree.
More gay women. Yeah. That's the message we'll leave this I'm a Celeb segment on. More gay women in media.
Yes, please.
We're moving on to a story that I kind of didn't absorb at first, and then another one of these stories that kind of forced its way onto my feed. Because it's not generally the stuff that I read about, but Balenciaga are in trouble. You can imagine that didn't grab me initially. I was like, oh, poor Balenciaga. Digging into it more, I was like, oh, okay, there's more to this. For anyone who is aware or isn't aware, high-end French fashion brand, yes, I had to Google that, Balenciaga, have issued an apology and pulled their recent holiday campaign after it sparked major backlash online. Adverts that the company released featured children carrying the brand's plush bear bags, which are wearing S&M kind of style harnesses. And another advert for their hourglass bag displayed documents from the Supreme Court related to child pornography cases. The brand has issued two separate apologies in the last couple of days, given mounting pressure. Firstly, they said, "We sincerely apologize for any offense our holiday campaign may have caused. Our plush bear bags should not have been featured with children in this campaign. We have immediately removed the campaign from all platforms." They followed that up with a second apology, saying, "We apologize for displaying unsettling documents in our campaign. We take this matter very seriously and are taking legal action against the parties responsible for creating the set, and including unapproved items for our spring 23 campaign photo shoot. We strongly condemn abuse of children in any form. We stand for children's safety and well-being." I mean, if you knew nothing of the story and just read the apologies, you know it's bad. Like, if you were saying, "We strongly condemn abuse of children," you fucked up. Like, your marketing team has gone too far.
This is the thing, like, that line about, like, "We're taking legal action" is like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, that they were approved. Like,
they were approved.
Images like that don't just happen. Like, they get approved by many people.
Yeah.
So to kind of wash your hands of it as if, you know, we're shocked too, is like, no, babe.
Yeah.
Like, you're
it's
not.
It's a real softball addition, isn't it? Exactly. They're trying to suggest that they used an external agency to create the ads and that these were run without their kind of approval, which, again, like you say, is just, I mean, even in startup companies, that wouldn't happen. There's no way that a company as large as Balenciaga are letting a third party external stakeholder release marketing ads
without
like
their
that.
Approval.
No, there's no way. Obviously, people naturally were like, "Kim Kardashian, you should apologize too." I get the connection. She's been really linked with the brand over the years. For anyone who isn't aware, like myself, the balaclavas and all that stuff is all them. And she
basically everything she's been wearing for the last couple of years is Balenciaga.
They're the goggles as well, aren't they? Like the big, that's them.
All
as well.
Of the kind of onesie bodysuits kind of vibe.
She wore that at the Met Gala, didn't she? The black.
Yeah,
all black.
I think almost everything she wore on SNL that wasn't a costume was Balenciaga. Yeah, she's just really connected to them. Yeah,
really intrinsically linked with them in the last couple of years. And she was getting a huge amount of pressure to respond to this, which again, I was like, I kind of get in that she is such a brand ambassador for them, but it just kind of leads into another conversation that we've had many times over this series about, like, just how Kim Kardashian will constantly be scapegoated for stuff and, like, constantly drawn into the narrative as if she's to blame. Like, again, unlike Balenciaga, she would not have gotten approval about the marketing campaign that they were going to run for their plush bear bags. Like, it's really interesting. Is it just because she is a face and Balenciaga is a brand? Is it just because this is a person that we feel like we can get to and say, "You need to apologize," or "You need to address this"?
I think it's partially that, but I think it's partially that it's Kim Kardashian. Like, she is held to an impossibly high standard because, people really struggle. I think people still struggle with her level of success and her level of fame and her level of wealth. Like, I think the fact, because lots of people still have her categorized in their brains as, like, you know, famous for nothing and, you know, not smart and whatever, that like any chance they get to kind of cut her down or call her out for anything, they will. And like, let's be honest, sometimes she gives good reason and she needs to be called out. Like, you know, sometimes she says stupid stuff and she makes stupid decisions, but like, this is not one of those things. I mean, I would question, I think she's I'm bored of Balenciaga and Kim Kardashian, but like, you know, it's not her fault. She has nothing to do with this. So like, to kind of try and blame her for it is wild, in my opinion.
Well, the pressure obviously got to her. She released a statement, I think this morning or late last night.
Oh, I missed this.
And she has said, "I've been quiet for the past few days, not because I haven't been disgusted and outraged by the recent Balenciaga campaigns, but because I wanted an opportunity to speak to their team to understand for myself how this could have happened. As a mother of four, I have been shaken by the disturbing images. The safety of children must be held with the highest regard, and any attempts to normalize child abuse of any kind should have no place in our society, period. I appreciate Balenciaga removal of the campaigns and apology. In speaking with them, I believe they understand the seriousness of the issue and will take the necessary measures for this to never happen again." Now, she did also discuss her kind of ongoing work with the brand, in saying, "As for my future with Balenciaga, I am currently reevaluating my relationship with the brand, basing it off of their willingness to accept accountability for something that should have never happened to begin with, and the actions I am expecting to see them take to protect children." So she's staying working with them because they're obviously not going to, they're obviously going to do everything to secure.
I thought that would be the one good thing. I thought the one good thing we would get out of this would be Kim Kardashian cutting ties with Balenciaga. I'm so bored of it.
I'm sick of it. Yeah, I am sick of it.
But yeah, I mean, obviously Kim Kardashian is not up for child abuse. Like, obviously. But then, you know, the problem is that there is this idea, and it's all kind of, I think a lot of it comes back to QAnon, but it's infiltrated into kind of mainstream thinking that like a lot of the media and a lot of famous people are involved somehow in like pedophilia or, you know, interested in pedophilia, which are, I personally don't think is true. So I think anything like this is going to get really like really especially focused on at the moment. Obviously it's terrible. I mean, for me, it was the court documents are worse than anything else. Like, I can kind of understand someone being like, oh, the juxtaposition of the kid with the bag, whatever. I can kind of see it. I still think when you look at the images, they look gross.
Yeah.
And it just looks wrong. But like the court documents, I can't get my head around that at all. Like, whoa.
So
like, is this just some like one kind of maniac creative director who kind of was like, oh, this will be really subversive. And in fact, it's just gross.
And they were all from child pornography cases, right? So there was clearly also that understanding that this is linking in with the images that we're creating. So there was almost this kind of knowing participation
in
exactly what they were trying to exploit. Like, it's very weird. And I totally agree with your point about the QAnon, all that kind of stuff, especially where we are at the minute. Well, especially where it is at the minute in the US with midterms just after ending, like it's a very politically kind of active time right now. And all of those, I mean, for anyone who is kind of maybe unaware of what this is, you'll have no shortage of resources to look it up, but maybe look into like Pizzagate is probably like a good example of how celebrity culture and that kind of world first blended together on kind of in headline news. People might remember it from Hillary Clinton's run for president in 2016. Google that and it'll give you a bit of an understanding, but it definitely plays into. And I mean, Kim Kardashian is interestingly placed in that landscape, given her ex-husband obviously was big Trump fan, MAGA till I die. And I think that did rub off a little bit on her. Maybe that was unwanted attention, but I think she did grab some audiences from the red side of the field because of the comments that her ex-husband made. And I wonder, does that play into where she is now and how that will go with that kind of audience? That I don't know, maybe that's a reach, but how this statement will play with that kind of audience.
Oh, who knows? I mean, yeah, I mean, I would argue that, like, you know, because Kim does a lot of work for prison reform and stuff, and she went and met with Donald Trump several times during his presidency in order to kind of try and progress things in terms of prison reform and having people pardoned who were sentenced to death. And I think her kind of stance at the time, I think she said something like, you know, something, she didn't say these words, but like along the lines of kind of, you got to do what you got to do to get the job done. And like, that was why she went and met with him, and like anyone who would have been in that position, she would have met with. But so I think that kind of also makes people kind of connect her with that side. But I mean, it's pretty obvious, I think, from all of, you know, she's quite guarded in what she says, but I think she's made it pretty clear that that's not where she sits politically. Even just in terms of the program, like, you know, they did an episode about Planned Parenthood and increasing funding and stuff right after it was cut. And yeah, like I hope people, I don't know, I'm not like a diehard Kim fan, but like, I think that she gets a harder time than she deserves. And I think that for the most part, she means well. And like, you know, I think you're in a tricky position if you've got people that you've worked with. Again, it's that thing. If you bring it back to kind of humanity at a human level, like if you and I work together for ages and then, you know, a company you work for does this, you know, something like this, and you go to the person and you're like, you're in charge of this company. What the hell? Yeah. And they're like, honestly, like, I don't know how this happened. So-and-so approved it. They've been fired. This person did this. Like, you know, they've been fired. Like, we've cutting ties. We're suing. Like, it's very hard on a human level to be like, okay, well, I'm, you know, F you. Yeah. You'd probably be like, well, look, you're doing your best.
But I mean, so maybe far I'm we too haven't. Nice. No, but I would agree. I feel like if a company is taking responsibility and accountability and is absolutely addressing where these problems are coming from and moving forward, kind of trying to clean that slate, you kind of have to allow them the opportunity. But like, we haven't heard of any, as far as I'm aware, we haven't heard of any kind of people being let go or anyone. No. All we've got is this kind of fairly,
yeah, it's too vague,
washy kind of apology where they're trying to shift the blame onto someone else. I mean for a brand like Balenciaga, what does this do? Like, does it have a lasting impact? Like, I fail to see people still being outraged by this next Christmas when they're going into, I don't know, if people go into the shop and buy Balenciaga, whatever. Like, you
well,
know
I
mean?
Think you there'll be two, there'll be three groups of people. There will be the rich people who buy Balenciaga all the time who probably don't care because whatever, they just don't care. And then you've got the people who aren't rich but who save up and like big name designer brands, who maybe aren't even paying attention, probably haven't even heard. They just know that they like the look of Balenciaga on a handbag or a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And there will be some people obviously within that who would pay attention, who would be bothered. And then you've got the kind of middle ground of people who are outraged, who probably don't buy Balenciaga anyway. So like,
yeah,
I think, I don't
know. What's the lasting impact?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be that much, to be honest.
In the less than 24 hours since recording this, Balenciaga has released yet another lengthy statement, again apologizing for the campaign and sharing in more detail how it came to be released. "We strongly condemn child abuse," the company's statement read. "It was never our intent to include it in our narrative. The two separate ad campaigns in question reflect a series of grievous errors for which Balenciaga takes responsibility. All of the items included in this shooting were provided by third parties that confirmed in writing that these props were fake office documents. They turned out to be real legal papers, most likely coming from the filming of a television drama. The inclusion of these unapproved documents was a result of reckless negligence for which Balenciaga has filed a complaint. While internal and investigations are ongoing, we want to learn from our mistakes and identify ways we can contribute. Balenciaga reiterates its sincere apologies for the offence we have caused and extends its apologies to talents and partners." I mean, look, if it just gets rid of these looks off our screens during red carpets, like, as soon as I saw Dorit walk out of BravoCon with the head to toe Balenciaga, I was like, oh, and everyone praising her like she was some kind of visionary. I was like, we have seen this so many times, like, over the last 3 years. Like, I
don't understand the praise she gets for outfits. Like, one, she has a stylist, obviously. Two, she's mainly thin and blonde, and that's why they work for her. And three, like, it's always just like an exact, it's never creative. Like, it's not like the pieces are being put together creatively. It's like head to toe Fendi, head to toe Balenciaga, head to toe whatever. Like, if you had enough money or enough access to walk in and just take an outfit off a mannequin, then obviously you're going to look good. It's like, I always say, like, you know, please God, like, I wish I was one of those girls who could walk into Zara and like look at a mannequin and be like, I'll just buy that whole outfit. But no, it doesn't work that way for some of us who don't have the access.
But like you say as well, it's like boring. It's just like, and like, I, whenever we talk about Housewives, which we're getting to now in a second, spoiler, whenever we talk about Housewives and I talk about usually Beverly Hills and how I just think Dorit is so overrated, there are like a handful of people who will come in my DMs being like, she is the only visually interesting one on that show, she serves looks every week, and I'm like, does she though? Like, yeah, she looks grand sometimes. And sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, that's nice on Dorit. But like, it's nothing I don't get elsewhere. And it's nothing, like, I don't support the Erica Jane anymore. But like, no. OG Erica Jane in her first few seasons, I was like, this is visually interesting. This is exciting to me. This is new looks. I've never seen stuff like this before. Yeah. And it was like fun and experimental and very different for the space that she was in. Dorit, like you say, is with a stylist. And usually just stacking designer on designer on designer on designer, which like, you're going to look better. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just, I find her so
She's just trying so hard. She's trying so hard. And I mean, I would agree that like she is the most visually, aside if we remove Erica Jane, who actually hasn't been that interesting recently either.
I mean, money has really impacted
truly
her visual interest.
But she is probably the most interesting, but that's not saying a lot because the rest of them aren't really doing much. Lisa Rinna is trying, but she just so desperately wants to be Kardashian.
She's such a diehard. Yeah, she's such a tryhard. I do think Kyle has been, I don't know in season if I would agree, but outside of the season, like she's been doing a lot of like press, right? Like fashion shoots and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, she's been doing
Louise,
more.
You're on the cover of magazines. Come on, tell us.
She's been doing more interesting stuff for sure. But like, I think at the end of the day, Kim's or Kyle's instinct is always going to be a caftan. So like, you know, like she is who she is.
Oh, goodbye, Kyle. I love. Oh,
I actually did really like her reunion outfit though. The pink kind of shiny.
Yeah.
I don't know what material it was, but I liked that.
Yeah, I liked her. And the one she did, was it last season as well, where she had the like 90s spiky bun?
Hair,
yeah, I was like, kind of. So maybe reunion Kyle is like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is taking a break. Andy Cohen, executive producer, told E! News this week that Beverly Hills were taking a minute and then we'll be back shooting with them in the new year. This has obviously, I think, caused more worry given where we are with New York and how a similar announcement was made about New York.
Yeah.
And it's been a substantial amount of time now and we're still nowhere closer to kind of seeing our New York housewives back on the screen. Do we think this is just to have a bit of a reset? I feel like we've had kind of a rolling couple of seasons covering mainly Erica Jane's legal issues, with then the kind of the introduction of these newbies to kind of try and poke holes in it. Is this just a bit of a reset to kind of give them time to establish new narratives? Like, what do you think? Obviously you're a longtime fan and a friend of Kyle Richards.
Yeah. Me and Kyle are best friends. So I don't think this is that big a deal. I think it is. They're just taking a minute because obviously the way things ended with the season is kind of weird. Like the vibes are off. Kathy Hilton said she definitely wouldn't be going back if the cast was the same. And like, obviously I think genuinely they need to take a breath and just really consider what is best for the show.
Yeah.
And I think there do need to be changes made because we need some new drama that isn't about Kathy versus Lisa or even Kyle's family. I just think we need new and I don't need a total change of cast a la New York, but like I think it does need to be refreshed and I think it makes sense that they take a deep breath and have a look. I have heard lots of interesting rumors. I've heard rumors of Brandi Glanville coming back,
and LVP, which I don't know how I feel about LVP coming back, but
I don't need LVP coming back. That's not for me. But then they've also mentioned names of people like there's this girl, Morgan Stewart. Are you aware of Morgan Stewart?
Was she on E! News?
She was on E! News or like Daily Pop, which is gone now because they're going back to E! News. But she was also on this show called Rich Kids of Beverly Hills, which if you haven't watched, I highly recommend. It's very enjoyable. So her
husband is a Nepo baby, isn't he? He's like her husband has like a famous dad or mom.
Yes. Is it Tim McGraw?
Dr. Phil is her father-in-law.
So this is why I get confused because she was in a relationship and engaged and I believe got married to a different guy on Rich Kids of Beverly Hills. But anyway, she is like she is a brat, but she is like a smart, sassy brat. Like she's very entertaining. And I think if you threw a younger, like a super hot, bratty, smart woman in there, it would really like it would really amp things up a little bit. So I would love to see Morgan Stewart thrown in. I'd love to see Brandi come back because you know Brandi always brings the drama. Like she's a mess, but like I loved her on Ultimate Girls Trip.
She was so good on Ultimate Girls Trip, man. And I felt so bad for her after the Denise Richards season, and she kind of came out in interviews afterwards and she was like, I was really expecting to get a call for the next season. Like, I literally gave them their season based on kind of a story I told about this apparent relationship she had had with Denise Richards. And she was like, it was really hurtful to just not even hear from like Bravo at all. And I like, that's the one thing I find about ex-housewives is like, the ones who linger in that like breakup space, kind of waiting for their chance, like they, it's like a draw. Like Dorinda Medley is like,
oh my God, I
just the saddest creature, like just the saddest little creature.
Dorinda breaks my heart.
I just,
she was so good and then she went so dark.
She was the worst.
And when they did the Ultimate Girls Trip in the Berkshires, I was like, okay, Dorinda, come on now. Come back rejuvenated, like old, nice Dorinda. Not nice Dorinda, but like, you know, fun Dorinda. Yeah. Not this like person who's like really living in the darkness.
Bully-like. Yeah.
And unfortunately, she did all of the worst things. Like, I think one of the most insightful things that Brandy said on Ultimate Girls Trip was like, Dorinda, they're not going to bring you back if you keep acting like this. And it's true. This is not what people want to see. And it's true. But I agree. There is something about that post-Housewives kind of space limbo. Yeah, that's a bit weird. Like, I think Tamra Judge obviously came back. I don't know if you watch OC. I watch all of them because I'm sick. But well, I've literally been watching for, I think it's like 15 years.
You've had what? Yeah. OC, I haven't. I don't watch, but
see, I watched,
I know,
OC from the beginning. So like,
yeah, I know the landscape. It. That's my kind of way of understanding the conversation. Like, okay, that person came in here and they left here. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So OC is like the original Housewives. Like it's the first one. And Tamra was an iconic OC housewife, and she and Vicky Gunvalson, who was the OG of the OC, like she was one of the first, she basically started the whole, all of Housewives, and they both were kind of let go from the series, and Vicky did that, like, you know, hanging around hurt, I'm definitely going to be back thing, and Tamra didn't, and then Tamra was brought back and Vicky wasn't. Now I think Vicky is back in some capacity in this next series, but like, you know, I just think it's not a good look.
I do think Brandy had that time as well where she kind of lingered, and then she just went off and did her own thing, and I think she involves herself in the show in a really good way, and that she kind of tweets along with it or like, you know, does interviews about it, but she doesn't overplay her hand at all. I totally agree about Morgan Stewart. I hadn't heard that rumor, but I feel like that kind of young energy is what we're missing. I think they thought they were going to get that with Crystal, and Crystal is just so measured and kind of boring that she's never going to give us that shakeup. Whereas when you think of Erica Jane, when she arrived, she was that young kind of, you know, firecracker energy that like made all these women gasp about like kind of the wild things she was saying and wearing. So definitely I think that is needed. There's also rumors about demoting Dorit, which I don't think has come a day too soon. Like,
I could do with less Dorit. Crystal, I love her, but we don't really need her on the show, I don't think. What do you think about Rinna?
Rinna is a hard one. I think Rinna is a great housewife, but I think I think the loyalties have firmed up so much that it's made her really, really rigid. And I think she panicked this season and got really scrappy in a way that wasn't fun to watch. Like her involvement in the story between Kathy and Kyle was just like, oh man, they're sisters. Like, you should really
get out of this.
It was weird. And then to pin it all on her grieving and like that it was because of the loss of her, it didn't feel real. Like, I would have preferred if she said, you know what, guys, like I was grieving, but I absolutely just went mad and like this happened and like I'm not proud of it, so I'm backing out now. But she really doubled down at the reunion. I think there is a place for her, but I like Kathy Hilton says, if Rinna and Erica stay together, I don't think I want to see that again.
I agree, like, because here's the thing, I have no problem with a housewife being a messy, mean bitch, like, because that's part of what makes the program good. But like, when it feels fake, that's when it's a problem. Or when it feels samey, like if it's against the same people over and over and over again, you're like, what are you doing? And the Rinna, I actually, to be honest, I could really do with Erica just going at this point. I'm bored
she's
of her.
Safe though,
I'm
right?
bored like, of her attitude. She's definitely safe, but I'm sick of her. And I think she causes problems within the group. I think she messes up the dynamic.
I agree. If I had to get rid of one, I'd get rid of Erica, but I would presume that Bravo will keep her until the legal stuff has all kind of been somewhat resolved.
We're not even getting anything out of that though. That's what annoys me. Like at the reunion when she's like, it's whatever her line was that she kept repeating, and she's like, it's a legal case and it's in court. It's a legal case and it's like, shut up, Erica. You're not a lawyer. You were married to a lawyer. Like, stop.
Do you think they're just banking on her? Oh, I'm the same. I have no time for either. And I feel like this idea that she has as well, that like, you know, without me, what would your season have looked like? I'm like, well, there's actually loads of other storylines that didn't involve you at all because you're giving us nothing.
Yeah. And maybe we would have had someone better than you.
I mean, there's plenty of legal drama to follow elsewhere. I'm talking Jen Shaw and Salt Lake City and all the other places. Do we think Bravo, like, we're not watching her
CSI or like Law and Order? Like, I know it feels that way these days, but like that isn't.
They come in dust to her house for fingerprints.
Honestly.
Do we think they're keeping her for like a gotcha moment? Like keeping her for a moment that something breaks and they're literally filming with her and they can get like, because so far there's been very little payoff.
Yeah, I really don't know. Like, I think in a way, like they've invested so much and they've kind of stayed with her that like they have to see it to the end, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to get a gotcha moment though. I really don't.
No, I don't think so either.
But I mean, it was, I will say, I thought it was good TV to watch her be so immovable in terms of expressing any sympathy for the alleged victims of her husband's kind of legal workings. Like, you know, that was shocking. Like, I've never seen something like that before, where someone is just like so willing to be empathetic at all. Like, it was remarkable. Just as in terms of like an anthropological study of humanity, I find it interesting. And like, you know, Kyle being like, please, like, I can't defend you if you keep acting like this, because
that was the biggest moment I felt from the whole time that they've just dragged out this Erica thing. It was actually seeing Kyle be like, Erica, no. Like seeing her crack and be like, Erica, please, like, come on. That was the most interesting moment we've gotten, I thought.
I agree, which makes sense in the context of what you were saying about the loyalties and all the kind of various bonds that have happened within the crew. Like, because it is boring to see them defend no matter what. So to finally see someone go, look, I actually can't defend this. Like, you have to stop, was a nice change. But that's, I think that's why they do need a refresher and a shake up, because we can't just see, you know, best friends defend best friends. We need a bit of reality in this reality show, basically, because currently what we're getting is very glossy and
just a sprinkle, you know, level. Just a little, just give a little us something. Dusting. Yeah. We mentioned New York City. Obviously, there are links between these conversations happening because New York City was put on pause and it was rebooted. And we're also reportedly getting a legacy season as well with original castmates. A little bit of an update on the rebooted series. We've already had a departure of one of the housewives, Lizzie Savetsky. She reportedly pulled out of the reboot due to anti-Semitism and abuse that she was getting online. She said she was the target of a lot of anti-Semitic attacks since her casting was announced. I think it was in October BravoCon happened. So just over a month ago. But there are other reports that there was stuff that happened behind the scene with her husband and racially insensitive words that he reportedly used while, I think, recounting a story of a conversation between two of the castmates. We're not going to get into it in detail because we need to move on. But where are you with Roni? Are you excited for the reboot? Are you more interested in the legacy? Because I see a lot of the OG casts kind of being very cocky about like, well, no one's going to watch the reboot. They're all going to watch the legacy. And I personally wouldn't be so confident because I'm actually really curious to see the reboot.
Yeah, I mean, I will always watch a new fresh batch of Housewives, like always. If there's one thing about me is I'm going to watch the new girls. Like, I'm very excited. I'm really excited to see, oh God, why is her name?
Jenna
from J. formerly Crew. Head of J. Crew. What the hell is her surname? That's going to drive me crazy. But I'm really excited to see her because thank you, Jenna Lyons. Really excited to see her because she's like a powerful, speaking of a queer representation, she's like a powerful queer woman. And, you know, I'm interested to see who the other women are. I think it's a shame that Lizzie decided to leave. Like, I saw, you know, there was mention of the fact that she's like very pro-Israel. And I think, you know, there was feedback on that. Obviously, people have legitimate strong feelings about Zionism and stuff. And, you know, that isn't necessarily anti-Semitism. Like, those are two different kind of conversations, but not everyone feels that way. And I can understand, like, at the end of the day, you have to protect yourself. So I get it. If she's like, look, I don't have to take this, and she doesn't have to take it. And so it's good in a way that she removed herself. But I think it would have been interesting to see what she brought to the table, because she is an Orthodox Jew. And I am fascinated by that culture personally. I don't, did you watch the reality series that was on Netflix, My Unorthodox Life?
Yes.
Oh my God, I was bet into that. There's another series coming.
But are they going to cover her legal stuff?
Well, I don't know.
This is Julia Hart, right? This is the woman who left the severely, she was in a real Orthodox Jew community. She left her kids, some of her kids came with her.
Yeah.
And she became the CEO of a lingerie brand. Is that
it was like a modeling agency.
But
like they also did loads of other stuff. She's just a very interesting person. Yeah. But I found the insight into
the culture.
Kind of, the culture and the communities of, like, you know, the kind of Orthodox Hasidic community in New York, just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
So anyway, I would have liked to have seen if we might have gotten a little bit of that. I mean, I know it's not necessarily, she's an Orthodox Jew as opposed to like Hasidic, but like I think it would have been interesting to see. But anyway, she's gone, so good riddance. Yes, I mean, look, I'll be watching both of them. Of course I will.
Yeah, same. I know. I'm like, which one will I choose? Of both.
I think I'm more excited about the new ones than
I'm excited about the new ones, because I'm excited to have a new landscape. Like, I'm excited to go to new places and see what.
Yeah, like I want to be in New York, and I just don't necessarily always want to be at the Regency.
Yeah. I just don't feel like Roni in the last couple of seasons, I don't feel like it gave that like Taylor Swift welcome to New York energy. You know what I mean? It was a bit tired, but there was some good people in it.
I do think that they got screwed a little bit, because I think they were the cast that got really shafted by COVID. Like, they could film almost nowhere. They couldn't take on a new housewife. They had like, so I think there was only five of them or something. And it never works, in my opinion, when there's that few. I do kind of want justice for Leah, to be honest, because I love Leah. And I feel like we lost out on like a proper second Leah series.
People who want her on the reboot, which I think would actually be such a lovely, like, connector between seasons.
Yeah, I think so too. But obviously she's not doing it. So
she's not doing it.
I mean, look, Legacy, I will watch, as I said. I'm happy that Ramona's not in it. Genuinely, like, I've had enough of her. I'll watch every, like, I'll watch it, obviously. Even if it was terrible, I'd be watching it.
Like. Yeah, I know. We're like, why are we dancing around this? We're absolutely watching it. Finally, we're going to talk about something that I could not escape on TikTok. We're going to breeze through it really quickly. But Adele's Las Vegas residency.
Mm-hmm.
Did you care? Did you want to be there? Have you seen her live before?
I've seen her live a few times. I saw her in the Olympia, which will never be beaten. That was spectacular.
Bizarre. Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, it was. I think it was just after her second album came out. And so the gig had been booked before they kind of realized how huge she was going to be, I think. So it was one of those gigs that everybody wanted to go to, you know, because everybody knew it was, you're never going to see her somewhere small like that ever again.
Yeah,
it was magic. Daniel Day-Lewis was standing near me at that gig.
Wow.
It was amazing. And then I was at Glastonbury when she headlined at the Pyramid Stage. So I was there too. And I saw her one other time, but I can't remember where.
That's a really good mix of Adele gigs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love her, obviously.
Yeah.
She's gas and she's amazing and she's such a great songwriter and singer. And I would love to see her in Las Vegas, but I'm not flying to Las Vegas to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I like that we get to see so much of it just via the internet.
Yeah. So I saw her last summer in Hyde Park and I was actually quite disappointed, but it wasn't because of her. Really? I think it was the venue. I didn't think it worked. Like, her being this big, like, massive like show singer, like this huge performer. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, I don't know, it felt like I was at a festival because of the setup, and it wasn't, I didn't get that energy back from the product. It felt really mishmashed and it didn't.
Yeah. I think those gigs outside are never as good as inside when you're talking about one person. Yeah,
it didn't click.
I agree.
It didn't click for me. But again, I'm not flying to Vegas. This is her first residency in Vegas. It's held at the Coliseum. This was the one that got canceled earlier in the year because she came onto her Instagram stories the day before and said the show wasn't ready, which obviously caused a lot of anger and frustration from fans, many of whom were already in Vegas waiting for the show. But it's running from, I think it started last week, and it's running until the 25th of March. She has just announced two more New Year's Eve shows. It's going to be like a 5-month series, Friday and Saturday night shows. And it's reportedly going to make her the highest paid female star in the history of Las Vegas residency, earning her well over $500,000 and up to $950,000 per night.
Jesus Christ.
That is a fucking paycheck.
Oh, wouldn't you love just one of those?
Just one of them. One of them.
Just one. Just get me a house. You know, what's it to Adele? She doesn't need it.
One night. That's all I'd need.
This is a question that comes up on my podcast all the time. Like, when are you rich enough? Like, at what stage can you just like...
When you're like, yeah, I'm
honestly,
grand now.
I just, everything I make from now on, I'm going to give away. Like, anyway. Like, I'd rather she have it than Elon Musk.
This is it. And I'm always such a weirdo that I'm like, how is she getting paid? Like, is it coming in monthly into her, you know what I mean? Does she get, like, is she paid by, like, does she get cash? Like, I'm like, how does it work? Like, where is the money going? When does it reach her current count? And when is she able to spend
it? She logging into the like permanent TSB app and looking at like, oh, just the 50 like, million?
Yeah. Oh, my pay should have come in today. Like, it's late. What's going on? Like, let me get on to payment and see if it's coming in. Like, bizarre. Anyway, the videos look amazing. We've all seen the video of her disappearing into confetti and the piano burning on fire. And it made me think just like generally what you said. I'm not going to Vegas, but who would you go to Vegas for? Like, who would you make that trip? I do think someone like Celine Dion.
I would go for Beyonce.
Beyonce would be good.
I've seen Celine Dion a lot of times and I would very much enjoy it, but like I don't think I'd make the journey. I would fly, I think, like almost anywhere for Beyonce because I love her, but like I find her shows just like to be a biblical experience essentially. And then I don't know, like I feel like we're quite lucky now, you know, we do have access to a lot of music, and even if people don't come to Dublin, you can usually go to like, you know, London or Berlin or somewhere closer than Vegas, you know. What about you? Who would you go to see?
I just always remember that scene in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days where they came out of the Caesar Palace Celine Dion show, and I was like, oh, that would be amazing.
It would be amazing.
It would be like, and I've seen her
a good few times. Yeah, she's amazing. She is amazing. She really puts on a great show.
Yeah, my mom went to see her in Croke Park years ago, and she was
I went to that.
It was apparently a good night.
I'm so old. I would go to Dolly as well. I've seen Dolly loads of times, but if she was doing a residency like that, I would have to go and see it. Yeah, 100%.
And I would also Shania Twain's Las Vegas residency. I think that would have been magic as well. But it's just a lot of money. Like, you'd want to be a diehard fan. Like, you really would want to be a diehard fan to go in. But I just do think there's something about a Vegas residency. I want to do it like once in my life that I'm like, we're going over to see this person.
Yeah, because it seems they get to be like really extra because there's so much money involved that they can they can really push the boat out and like go hard. So that's kind of what you want to see. You want to see the spectacle in the show, especially if it's one of your favorite artists.
And again, because I suppose they're not touring, they're not like upping ship and having to move it and reassemble.
No, exactly. So they can make it bigger and better.
So they have that time to kind of really tweak things. Rumors are circulating that Kylie Minogue is going to take over from Adele in where is it, Caesar's Palace, when it's over. Not quite the payday that Adele's going to be getting. Apparently she's in talks for £100 million. So whatever that is in dollars.
I feel so sorry for her.
No. Oh, Kylie, you poor thing. Hard done by. Anyway, we move on. That's our news for the week. We're going to be talking about what has brought us joy this week, or something that you, maybe not joy, but just that you really stood out to you. Anything this week that made you smile, that stuck out?
Genuinely putting up the Christmas tree. I love it. I don't know if you've talked about this. I haven't heard the last couple of episodes, but I am just so flat out on that White Lotus again. I'm obsessed. Like every week I'm just like gasping for the new episode. Like
so good.
I've kind of moved into a time in my life where I'm furious when they don't just give me all the episodes at once so that I can control the pace of my viewing. But the White Lotus has actually kind of changed that for me a little bit. I'm kind of enjoying the fact that I have to wait.
Oh,
it gives me something to look forward to.
Okay, I get you. No, I'm really enjoying it. The theme song this year is like so addictive. I keep going around and like, ooh, like doing this. I'm like, that's not it. good.
I love it.
But my girlfriend is like obsessed. Like she gets really angry when we don't have a new episode. She's like, oh yeah, we'll watch White Lotus. What? I thought we're meant to have the new episode tonight. Like, she gets really angry at our Skybox. Yeah, if it, like,
I relate. I think, like, we have a new one tonight. I think there's a new one available now.
Mondays are our new episodes. Yeah, really good. And I mean, Jennifer Coolidge,
but like Aubrey Plaza is so great in it. Megan, is it Megan Fahey? Yeah,
the bold type. Oh,
yes, I love the bold type. She is just absolutely brilliant. I've also been watching, I had kind of fallen off Virgin River on Netflix.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I watched the first two series, like basically mainlined them. And yeah, I remember at around that time, it was the pandemic. And around that time, Lily Allen tweeted or like said on Instagram, she's like, I need more Virgin River immediately. And I was like, yes, me too. Because I'd watched the first two series just back to back. And then I watched, I don't know what happened, but like I watched the first maybe episode of the third season and then didn't go back to it. So then I've just been, over the course of the last couple of weeks, I've been doing jobs around the house, and it's been on in, I've been watching it the entire time. So I'm very much.
How many seasons? Is there four now?
Yeah.
Because I think I did the exact same. I think I watched one and two and I have not gone back.
Oh,
and
like, go back.
I wonder, is it because I just, that wasn't released weekly though, was it? Like, that was,
no.
Surely they were like, just take it off. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
maybe well, they're all there now. And like, it's just like, I really like that kind of TV for, it just helps me switch my brain off. Like, it's not serious.
Warm.
I mean, yeah, it's so ridiculous. Like, I mean, the amount of traumatic things that happen in that small town.
I know.
It's like beyond.
Just the number of teenage pregnancies and yeah.
Like the drug gang in the woods and like, yeah.
Oh my God, yeah.
And yes, it's comforting. And so, yeah, that's the other thing that I've been kind of flat out on.
Yeah, I might actually dip into that because you totally need one of those shows on the go at all time. Don't you? Just like warmth, just like Hallmark type
wholesome
stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing too deep, nothing too much of an investment.
Everybody means well, except for the bad guy.
Who still care about their local community though. So like, don't hold it against them. I, unlike that kind of viewing experience, I watched a movie at the weekend that was being served to us in ads, like quite a lot. And it was on Netflix. And I have to say, it was not the movie I was expecting, but it was absolutely unbelievable. Have you seen The Swimmers on Netflix?
No, I'm dying to watch it. Netflix is desperate for me to watch it, and I'm desperate to watch it.
So Netflix is absolutely tapping up our algorithms then, because I was the same. I was getting so much like messaging about it.
I literally got another notification because I have Netflix like screen notifications or whatever.
Pop-ups.
I got one just as I logged on to talk to you.
It's so good. But don't think we hadn't watched a trailer. We'd literally watched like the little clip that they show on Netflix, and the clip that they had showed us was these two girls, Yusra and Sarah, two sisters from Syria, and it was them swimming. So we were like, oh, okay, right, we'll throw it on, whatever. Didn't realize really that it was the story of them leaving Syria and looking for refuge in Europe, trying to make their way to Germany. And it's heavy. Like, it is absolutely heavy, and it's such an amazing true story about these two sisters that did make this journey and all the difficulties that came along with, you know, taking a dinghy from the coast of Turkey to Greece to try and make it to safety, and what that looked like and the dangers that they faced and how the system failed them in certain places and helped them in others. And it's amazing. And it's about Yusra's goal of making it to the Olympics and becoming an Olympic swimmer. And it's brilliant. It's a little bit long. I know that matters to some people. It's like, oh, it's nearly 2.5 hours. But it got like, it's a little bit long.
Me. I can't stay awake for that long, Orla.
I know.
I'm sitting still for anything more than an hour, it's a struggle. I can do an hour and a half.
Yeah.
2.5. Jesus.
It's nearly 2.5. And
some of us are tired.
I know. I know. I'm the same. And I didn't notice how long it was until we were halfway in. And I was like, fuck it, we're in now. We've got to keep going. But like, that does factor into the decision sometimes. But it's amazing. And it got a 4-minute standing ovation at the, I think, Toronto Film Festival.
Right.
So like,
no, I'm definitely
going
to watch it. Yeah.
It is. It's really good. It's heavy though. So after that, my other love of the week, we took ourselves off to TK Maxx and got ourselves like too many Christmas candles.
Love this.
Why? It's like a drug. I think we dropped about 40 quid on candles.
Yeah, it's easily
done. In a cost
of
living crisis. I was like, we need them. We need them.
But they do improve your life, I think, especially around Christmas. Like, you know, there is something about them. They make everything feel cozy, even if you can't afford to turn the heating on. If you have a candle on, like, they do
just warm your little hands.
Cozier. Yeah, just sit close, face pressed against the glass.
And it's all, I just love the experience because you go and it's all usually just women my age just sniffing various jars for like longer and then turning them to whoever's with them to get like a second.
It sounds like a Saturday Night Live sketch, but yes.
Oh, it's so good.
Or Bo Burnham song.
Oh my God. And it fully just turned the mood back onto Christmas and it was brilliant. So that brought me joy this week. Would highly
good
recommend.
For you.
Finish with some listener contribution really quickly. We spoke about The Real Housewives, and I'm very aware that some of you don't watch. I highly encourage, as I'm sure Louise will as well.
What are you doing with your life? Yeah, I mean, honestly, what's in existence without that as well?
Welcome you with open arms when you're there. But I wanted to know, is there any other reality TV shows that people are obsessed with that they don't feel like get the kind of attention that they deserve?
Oh, I'm very excited to hear this.
So a real mixed bag, a couple of repeat offenders. Was really, really happy to see this one pop up time and time again. Are You the One? I have spoken about it.
I haven't seen this.
Oh, Louise. I've spoken about it so many times on here, so many times on My Pot on Paper.
I've heard you, yeah.
I'd never shut up. It's so good. It's MTV. There are a few seasons on Netflix, I'm pretty sure. Their most recent series was a LGBTQ plus series where all of the contestants were bisexual. So it meant that
everybody,
the normal structure is there's, you know, five straight men, five straight women, and there's five perfect matches. Whereas this was like 10 bisexual people. Mm. It gave you an unlimited number of matches. And it
so
was
so many permutations.
Oh, it was chaotic and it was so good. And
it
was the perfect proof that LGBTQ plus versions of these shows can work. You just need to make them LGBTQ plus version.
Okay, right, I'm sold. I'm in.
Dive in. It's so good. California came up quite a few times.
Christ.
I mean, if I could just watch the video about the eggs on YouTube, that's all I need from that, to be honest.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think I'd actually find it too embarrassing at this point. Because I feel like I'd be embarrassed for the people now, you know, because they really were shameless in a very impressive way during the filming of that show. But now I feel like they've got to be more so.
Yeah. And it just felt like it didn't feel real at all. Like it didn't feel like, oh, this is what Dublin is like in your early 20s. You know, it just didn't.
Yeah.
Anyway, couple of Bravo shows that I think you watch. Below Deck, Summer House.
Yes. Winter House.
I want to get on the Summer House and Winter House vibe. I think that's definitely for me.
Oh, please. It's so good. It's so fun. I love it so much. It just brings so much joy to my life. Like, I don't know what it is about it that I like so much, but it's so good. But Summer House is a spin-off of Vanderpump Rules, which is a spin-off of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So if you haven't watched Vanderpump Rules, I highly recommend that. Like,
didn't realize the connection.
Yeah. So Vanderpump Rules has lost its way a little bit in the last few series, but like the original few series are unreal. Like, I think I might go back and rewatch them actually. And then, basically what they did was a couple of the girls from Vanderpump Rules went to visit their friends in the Hamptons who were Winter House or Summer House.
Okay.
Sorry. So
okay,
so that's the connection. That's how we originally met the Summer House people. And then they started Summer House, and Summer House is really good. So the premise of Summer House, for anybody who doesn't know, is it's these like, you know, young, hot, successful New Yorkers who go to the Hamptons every weekend for the summer. So during the week, they go back to New York. You don't really see that. They go back to New York and work, and then they come and they, you know, party at the weekend in a fancy house in the Hamptons, and it's very good. Lots of drama ensues. Winter House is a spin-off of Summer House, where they get people from Summer House who go to Vermont to go skiing in the winter for a few weeks, and they're filmed, but also other people from other casts, mainly Southern Charm, which is another brilliant Bravo series, come and join them. So you get a mix of various Bravo casts. It's brilliant. Shaws of Sunset, another one, highly recommend, which is on Hayu if you're watching on Hayu. Yeah, I could talk about these shows forever.
They really cross-promote. I didn't realize that Summer House and Vanderpump Rules were connected. Keep waiting.
Very loosely, but that's how they introduced it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because me and my partner obviously watch Housewives together, but like, I don't know if she's ready to like take on a new So maybe I'll just take this one on myself, because I feel like I've waited so long now, and I feel like I really want to jump on the Summer House bandwagon. But I don't. You say I can't do it without what? Well, not can't do it, but that I should watch Vanderpump Rules first.
You can absolutely do Summer House without it, like 100,000,000%. But if you're like a completist and a purist like me, you're gonna want to get in at the ground floor. Just the early series of Vanderpump Rules are so good. Like, you know, just as a gift to yourself, I would recommend that you do it. Yeah.
I always like gifts to myself. The Circle, another one that came up quite a bit. That's gone, and the Netflix one is shit. I'd love if they brought that back. Was that Channel 4?
I don't know. I didn't watch it now, I have to say.
Oh, sorry, it's Patty so Smith. Good. I know. Big shout out to Patty Smith, Irish winner. It's so good. But it came on at about, I think it came on at the same time as Love Island, but it came on at like 8 p.m. or something like that, in the hopes. I think that was how they tried to do it. Yeah. And I just don't think it ever quite, because it took off when Love Island was really at that like fever pitch popularity. And I just think it maybe was a victim of the timing. It's still on Netflix, but it's shit. It's American, even though Scary Spice was on. Anyway, that was recommended. What else have we got? Sister Wives. I have to say, I do dip in at like 4 p.m. of TLC.
I have been trying, because I know there's a lot of shit going down in Sister Wives now currently at the moment in the recent series. So and Casey
has a wife Wilson, left. Is that?
Yeah, I think so. So Casey Wilson, who's one of the co-hosts of Bitch Sesh, which is a Housewives podcast that I listen to, kept saying like, now is the time to get in. And so I DM'd her and I was like, look, I need you to tell me how far back do I need to go? Because there's like 17 series. And I was like, I can't go back to series one. I just don't have the time. So I was like, if I want to appreciate the current drama, she recommended that I go back and watch the first one or two series, just to get the context, and then go back. I think she said like two or three series. So I'm doing that at the moment. I'm on like, I think season 14. And I need to get up to date. I had to take a break. It was too much, but I'm going to go back to it because I hear, there's a lot going down.
He's torturous, isn't he? Anytime I watch it, I just find he's awful.
Awful.
He's really, he's really difficult to watch. Like, truly. He's really annoying. Like,
I totally agree.
Yeah.
He's the worst.
And I do see the headlines, and I'm like that. I'm so like that as well, where I'm like, I see the headlines. I'm like, I want to understand why people are freaking out over this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me. I just get FOMO for like, if there's a reality TV, that's why I've seen so many of the shows, because I need to know what's going on.
I need to know. Maybe I'll just pay more attention now on my 4 p.m. kind of scroll when work's nearly over. Final one from Cassie in the studio, Handmade. Britain's Best Woodworker. She says it's the best thing on telly.
Cassie. Really?
We need a quick bio on this. Handmade, Britain's Best Woodworker.
Mel Goodrich hosts as a talented, good with woodcrafts people compete to be crowned Britain's Best Woodworker. Okay.
Wow.
Actually, this sounds like something that I would enjoy. It sounds like talented. I like all those shows.
A big build project. Yeah, like, I'm about this.
All the like Bake Off, the jewelry show, I really like. I can't really get into the Sewing Bee one, but this actually, maybe I could get into this.
Is this Bake Off for builders? Because it's like they have technique challenges. Cassie, thumbs up or thumbs down? Yeah.
Bake Off for woodworkers. Yeah. I can get down with this.
That's the hook. Like, that is the hook. I mean, okay.
That's how you have to pitch it to me. Yeah, great.
that's just on the Bake Off scale, where are we falling? Although Bake Off this year was a bit disappointing, but anyway.
I know, I actually didn't watch it. I watched the first season and then I fell off. Yeah.
I still don't know who won. That's how poor this year was. I haven't watched the final and it hasn't been spoiled for me.
I actually don't know who won either.
It's been weeks, Louise.
I know that my favorite person didn't win.
I think I know who that is as well, because he was mine.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the only reason to watch, really. Now, in fairness, I would have kept watching, but like, I'm busy. And as I mentioned, I'm criminally tired. So by the time my kids are asleep, like, I'm lucky if I get to watch two programs, I'm doing really well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to really cut the wheat from the chaff. Is that? Anyway, standards are high.
Standards are high, but we'll usually just revert to some kind of Housewives show because we know it'll deliver.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap it there. Louise McSharry, it's been fun talking about all of our favorite things and some other things like Matt Hancock, which wouldn't fall under that category. I know the catch up has been going for a while, but congratulations on the success.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's so nice to see. it's just so nice to see Irish podcasts thriving and see people creating new stuff and it doing really well and people receive it really well. And like, thank I was you. Even catching up on the group chat the other day from Virgin, and I was like, I love this for these guys that they've really hit a rhythm. Like, it's just lovely to see people doing well, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I say this all the time, but you know, people slag off the fact that there's so many podcasts now, but it is a real democratizer, and it means that people can really do things that they never would have had the opportunity to do before. And there is room for everyone. I really believe that, because, you know, we all have our little niches and our little things that we're interested in. And that's the beauty of the podcast landscape. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. We shall end it there. Go forth this week and have a great time. We'll be back next week with more of this nonsense. We'll talk to you then. Thank you so much to my guest, Louise McSharry, for joining me on the podcast this week. And thank you to you guys for tuning in each and every week. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at don'tquoteme.podcast. And you can also find us on all of your favorite podcast apps, so you can listen whenever and wherever you like. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. And yes, all of the latest goss. We'll talk to you then.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.